Good morning or good evening or everything in between, you legends. And welcome to Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales, and I'm your tale teller from down under. And my goodness, in Australia it is freezing cold, bucketing down, and very windy. I hope the weather is faring much, much better for yourselves. Today's intro is going to be a short one, namely because it's raining like crazy. You can't hear it, but as usual, whenever it rains here in Aussie land, my net and my power can conk out for a bit. So, I'm going to super edit this and get this uploaded ASAP for your lovely ears. I want to thank my amazing Patreon supporters, particularly my Ode Night Tea Titan, Matto, superbly awesome star, and my two white tea warlords, Lesosaurus Rex and Joseph Schroeder. You guys are the backbone. Thank you so much. And also my amazing Earl Grey enforcers. Thank you all for your support. Hopefully the weather clears up and I won't have to worry about losing my net or losing my power. But otherwise, have a fantastic week ahead of you and enjoy the tales that I'm sharing today. I bring you one poem, The Smallest of Objects, The Friendly Sunshine Gnomes, they're not friendly, and The Well in the Basement, Mystery and Mayhem. Enjoy, you spectacularly awesome listeners, and I'll catch you next Monday, hopefully as right as, well, without rain. And enjoy your tales. The Well in the Basement. In the quaint, isolated town of Autumnville, nestled deep in the woods, far from prying eyes, stood an old, decrepit house that had been in my family for generations. This house was more than just a structure. It was a living testament to a lineage steeped in mystery and silence. To the untrained eye, it was just another relic of bygone days. Its crumbling facade and sagging roof, a mere curiosity for passing hikers. But to me, it was the keeper of my darkest secrets, a silent witness to unspeakable acts. The house had once been a majestic sight, a sprawling Victorian mansion built by my great-great-grandfather, a man of considerable wealth and somewhat dubious mortality. Its walls were thick and imposing, designed to withstand the harshest elements, or perhaps to conceal the secrets within. The exterior, once painted a cheerful yellow, had long since faded to a sickly, mottled grey, the paint peeling in long, curling strips. The windows, tall and narrow, were clouded with grime, their wooden frames rotting and splintered. Ivy and moss crept up the walls, choking the life from the ancient stones and adding to their air of neglect and decay. Inside, the house was a labyrinth of shadowy corridors and cavernous rooms, filled with the relics of its halcyon days. The grand foyer, with its sweeping staircase and ornate chandelier, had long since lost its luster. The chandelier's crystals were coated in dust, and the staircase banister was sticky with the residue of years of humidity and neglect. The wallpaper, once vibrant with intricate patterns, now hung in tattered strips, revealing the bare splintered wood beneath. Dust lay thick on every surface, undisturbed by human touch for years. And the floorboards groaned underfoot, their protests echoing through the silent halls. The air inside was thick and oppressive, a miasma of mildew and decay that clung to my skin and filled my lungs with each breath. The scent was a constant reminder of the house's age and the secrets it held. Every creak and groan seemed amplified in the silence, each sound a ghostly reminder of the house's sinister history. The true heart of the house, though, lay beneath it, hidden behind a heavy oak door that was always locked. The entrance to the cellar was a place I avoided unless absolutely necessary. The cellar was a place of perpetual darkness, where the cold seemed to seep into your very bones, and the silence itself was a living, breathing entity. At the far end, concealed behind a stack of forgotten crates and cobweb-covered shelves, was the well, this ancient construct, with its stone walls slick with moss and moisture, was a gaping maw that exuded a chill unlike anything else. It was a seemingly bottomless pit that has swallowed my darkest deeds without a trace. The well was not just a physical presence, it was a constant source of fear and dread, a silent sentry that watched over me my entire life. In the quiet moments of the night, when the wind whispered through the trees and the house settled with ghostly creaks, I could hear it calling to me. The whispers of my past, the voices of those I had sent to its depths, echoed in my mind, driving me to the brink of madness. The well was both my confessor and my judge, its dark influence ever present, a reminder of the darkness that lurked within me. Over the years, the house became my prison, the well my tormentor. I would wander its halls, haunted by memories of the lives I had taken. Each room a reminder of the irreversible choices I had made. My old, decrepit house, far from being a mere relic of bygone days, was a living, breathing entity. Its decaying walls and shadowy corners, home to the darkest chapters of my life. My earliest memory is not of joy or innocence, but of my younger sister's incessant wailing. Her cries echoed through the dusty halls, piercing my young mind like a relentless drill. One sweltering summer day, as her shrill voice grated on my nerves, something inside me snapped. I was only 10 years old, but in that moment, consumed by a rage I couldn't comprehend, I silenced her forever. With trembling hands, I carried her lifeless body to the well in the cellar. The ancient stones, covered in moss and ivy, seemed to whisper my sins as I lifted the heavy lid. I dropped her into the cold, dark abyss, expecting the guilt to swallow me whole. But the next day, when I nervously peered into the well, her body was gone. The town searched for her, of course, They combed the woods and dredged the nearby river, but she had vanished without a trace. Eventually, they concluded she had wandered off and met a tragic fate, and the town mourned a lost child. As for me, I felt an odd mix of relief and confusion. The well had taken her, and in doing so, it had granted me a twisted absolution. Years passed, but the memory of that day never faded. The well remained a silent witness to my crime, and a dark secret that only I knew. I told myself it was a one-time aberration, a moment of madness, but deep down, I knew something darker lay dormant within me, waiting to be unleashed again. It was a sweltering summer afternoon, 5 years after my sister's disappearance, when the well demanded its next offering. I was a teenager by this point, navigating the volatile years of adolescence with a simmering anger that I struggled to control. That day, I was with my friend Tommy, a boy whose boisterous laughter and relentless teasing had grated on my nerves for years. We were in the woods behind my house, near the outside entrance to the basement and the well that had become both a source of dread and dark fascination for me. The sun beat down on us, the heat amplifying every irritation. We were playing a game that quickly turned into a heated argument. Tommy mocked me, pushing all the wrong buttons, and before I knew it, the world around me turned red. In a blind fury, I lashed out. My hands found a heavy branch, and with one swift, brutal swing, I struck him. The force of the blow was sickening, the crunch of the bone and the sudden silence more deafening than his taunts. Tommy crumpled to the ground, his body limp and lifeless. Panic surged through me, but alongside it was the cold, calculating part of my mind that now took over. I knew what I had to do. My hands shook as I dragged his body into the basement and over to the well. The same well that swallowed my sister all those years ago. The stone rim felt like the edge of an abyss, the darkness below an all-consuming void. With a final desperate heave, I pushed Tommy's body into the well. I watched as it disappeared into the shadows, the sound of the splash echoing in the silence. I backed away, my heart pounding in my chest, the weight of my actions pressing down on me. I spent the night in a relentless, feverish sleep, haunted by visions of Tommy's lifeless eyes. The next morning, driven by a morbid curiosity and a sliver of hope, I returned to the well. As I peered into its depths, my breath caught in my throat. Tommy's body was gone. The well had taken him, just as it had taken my sister. The ground around the well was undisturbed, and there was no trace of the horror that had transpired the day before. A strange sense of relief washed over me. The well had once again erased my sins, concealing my darkest deed. But with that relief came a chilling realization. The well's power was real, and if it was now a part of me, a dark shadow that would follow me for the rest of my life. The years rolled by, and I grew into adulthood with the well's darkest secret ever present in the back of my mind. Life moved on. I finished school, found a job, and even tried to lead a normal life. But the well's shadow never left me. I knew its terrible power, and a part of me feared that one day I might need to use it again. One fateful night, 10 years after young Tommy's disappearance, I found myself at a local bar, drowning my sorrows in a sea of alcohol. I met Rachel, a beautiful but equally inebriated woman. We bonded over our mutual loneliness and spent the night together. A few weeks later, she called me with news that shattered my fragile sense of normalcy. She was pregnant. Panic set in. I wasn't ready for the responsibility of fatherhood, and Rachel was adamant about keeping the baby. The fear of being trapped in a life I didn't want consumed me, and in a moment of drunken despair, I decided to solve the problem the only way I knew how. I lured her to the woods. Next, near the basement entrance to the well, and ended her life with a cold, calculated precision that terrified me. The next morning, her body, like all the others, were gone, swallowed by the well's insatiable darkness. Years turned into decades, and the well's secret remained hidden. 15 years later, I found myself in the corporate world, working under a boss who was a tyrant. He made my life miserable. His constant belittling and impossible demands driving me to the brink. One day, after yet another humiliating public dressing down, something inside me snapped. I followed him home, confronting him in the parking lot of his apartment complex. The rage that had been simmering for years erupted, and I attacked him, my hands finding a steel pipe left carelessly in the shadows. The deed was done quickly, almost too easily. I transported his body to the well, my heart pounding with a mix of fear and anticipation. As always, the next day his body had vanished and I was free from his torment. It was now 20 years after my sister's death, and the well had claimed 4 lives. More importantly, each time it had erased my sins, allowing me to carry on with my life as though nothing had happened. But the darkness within me grew with each act, and I became increasingly isolated, haunted by the faces of those I had sacrificed to the well. Then came the day my mother, now elderly and frail, became too much for me to handle. She had been my one faithful companion all these years, the one who had shared our home without sharing the burden of my dark secrets. She'd always been surprisingly strong for a woman her size, able to perform tasks you would never expect for such a demure frame. But now she needed constant care, and the cost of putting her in a home was more than I was willing to pay. The solution seemed a twist of logic driven by years of getting away with murder. One night I slipped into her room and ended her suffering. This time, as I dragged her to the well, a strange sense of unease settled over me. The familiar process felt somewhat different, and I was tainted by a deep, more personal guilt. I pushed her body into the well and walked away, expecting the well to do what it had always done. Written by Darius Mick Corkindale, The Well in the Basement. The Smallest of Objects. The smallest of objects possessed in hand only seems so small, a testament to flee, to sojourn in a strange yet tame land, in an attempt to imitate a fool's decree. In a single maelstrom with a whirring lies, there is nothing but acrostic aim, as if this final undertaking is a noble's familial ties, the resting temperament a whole of lost fame. To seek a dominion that awaits, in pulse moving towards a foe in blind glee, forthwith from the cloudy gates. Do you desire a new world to set you free? A peak so high, yet close to reaching near, the most devious of a realm in a lasting fate, the doubts bearing fruition of a mind so clear. For the reprise is the utmost strait. The Friendly Sunshine Gnomes. People always want answers, yet people are seldom ready to accept those answers. The problem is that sometimes the answers can be more disturbing than the unanswered question, and sometimes they only lead to more wondering. Sometimes answers aren't all they're cracked up to be. That's what I've learned in my experiences as a detective working on missing person cases. A few weeks ago, I began work investigating a particularly disturbing case. Three young girls had reportedly gone missing in the town's nearby woods, and their parents were worried sick. The disappearance was huge news in the small town. Search parties were out in full force. I was with one of many groups of people out there scouring the woods in every direction. We knew we had to act fast if we wanted to find them alive. For several days, we found absolutely nothing, and we had entered into our fifth night of looking. No one dared to say it out aloud. But we knew what we were looking for at this point. Corpses. We knew those girls weren't going to come walking out of the woods unharmed like nothing ever happened. I kept on looking. Walking through the dark woods alone, guided by my flashlight, while my team looked elsewhere in the other directions. The search was an incredibly somber and isolating experience. It's a very grim and morbid task to be searching for the remains of three lost children. It was a cold fall night. A waxing crescent moon loomed high above. The autumn leaves blanketed the muddy ground as I trudged onward. Suddenly, I heard an eerie sound. It sounded like soft singing in the distance. I turned all around but saw nothing in the autumn maze of orange, yellow, and brown. In hopes that it might somehow be the young girls, I yelled out, "Police! Do you need help?" There was no response. I sat there in silence for a moment before I continued walking. I noticed something very bizarre up ahead and went to inspect it. It was what I can only describe as an archway made of sticks and leaves. They formed an oval the size that a person could walk through. The formation appeared to be naturally occurring rather than man-made. It looked like something someone might want to stage for a wedding or a photography shoot. It was like something out of an old folklore story. What happened next is beyond comprehension. A small creature walked by me in the darkness, moving in a dancing motion as it went, a humming and peculiar tune. It moved into the viewer of my flashlight, and I could see that it appeared to resemble a small old man with a long whitish grey beard and a maroon pointed hat. The creature casually walking along looked identical to any gnome you'd see in a generic fairy tale depiction. Seeing something so cartoonish, but yet there right in front of me in real life was very surreal, uncanny, and disturbing. This couldn't be happening. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I felt like I was losing my mind. I watched as the mischievous little gnome skipped along towards the wooden archway. With a laugh, he walked through and disappeared completely before my very eyes. I was shocked to be really experiencing this. My entire conception of reality was shattering. Had I somehow been drugged? I wonder. This was something beyond what tiredness could explain. I approached the mysterious arched formation and studied it closely. It was just made of sticks and leaves. Nothing special. I put my arm through and held it there for a moment. Nothing at first, but then it started to slowly feel a bit numb. I took it out and stared at the archway once more. The feeling soon returned to my arm. Am I actually considering this? I thought. With an abundant lack of explanations for what I just saw, I decided to risk whatever danger I might face by walking through this apparently mystical archway. Feeling a bit silly, I took a deep breath and walked carefully through the natural stick structure. Suddenly my mind was in a daze. It was like waking up from a dream. I looked around to see the same woods I'd been standing in, but it was bright and sunny. All my senses were strangely heightened. My mind was buzzing. I looked down to see that the flashlight I was carrying had vanished. The leaves seemed brighter, the air felt nicer, and all seemed, well, huh. Where was I? I looked around, and that's when the little creatures came in, appearing from behind the nearby trees. There must have been about 10 of them. The gnomes were smiling as they danced around in a circle, laughing and singing an oddly familiar song. Once the gnomes walked up to me and began to mischievously dig through my pockets. He found the change I had in there and stole a single quarter. He lifted the shiny silver coin up in the air and it reflected the sun burning brightly above. He let out a tricksterish laugh, put the quarter in his pocket, and joined back with the others in their dance. I had no idea where I was, what I was witnessing, or how to react to any of this. Suddenly, the gnomes all took off and ran further into the forest. I chased after them. Running through a narrow opening in the dense section of brush, I was greeted with a disturbing new environment and the intense feeling that something was horribly wrong. I found myself standing with a large ring of trees deep in the woods. My run soon gave way to a slow and unsure forward. At first, what I saw looked to be a pile of yellowish off-white rocks, neatly settled upon the top of each other in a row. But when I got closer, it was clear and unmistakable that there were piles of skulls. Their laughter grew louder and more sinister, and their dances became more frantic as I crept slowly forward. Their taste of iron unexplainably filled my mouth. As I grew closer, I could see that the ground was covered in a dark red substance. The air became thick and humid, and I began to feel very claustrophobic. Dancing faster in a circle and checking manically, the gnomes were holding entrails and viscera all around them on the ground. It appeared to be the gore of dozens of unrecognizable bodies. There was so much blood. The foul and deathly odor assaulted my nostrils and turned my stomach. I was hit with waves of panic. I felt like my mind shut down completely and I was paralyzed where I was standing. The gnomes all turned to me, smiling, and simply continued their dark and morbid singing. I just remember screaming and screaming and screaming as loud as I could. Then just nothing. The rest is all blank. I don't remember a thing, but according to my partner, he found me zoned out and lying on the muddy ground of the dark woods where I had been searching for the girls. I was apparently clutching my flashlight and mumbling to myself. He says I must have had some kind of psychotic break. I'm not too sure. I would be tempted to blame it all on the stress of the job, but when I checked my pocket, a quarter was inexplicably missing. I spent the next few days looking over the case files. I had a lot of theories, but none of them made sense. According to the reports, the neighbor of the lost children had been looking out of her kitchen while washing dishes. She purportedly saw the older sister leading her two younger siblings by the hand into the woods. They were humming a strange tune as yet they disappeared off into the wilderness that day and were never seen again. The case file also revealed that the missing girls reportedly took a book from their playroom's bookshelf before vanishing. It was a children's fairy tale book with bright, happy illustrations of gnomes dancing through the forests. It was called The Friendly Sunshine Gnomes. I can still hear their odd singing in my mind at times when I'm alone. I don't think we'll ever find those girls or truly know what I experienced, and I am convincing myself more and more each day that I really don't need the answers. Written by Never You Mind Who, The Friendly Sunshine Gnomes. Thank you all for listening, you legends, and I'll be returning with my normal outro and shoutouts next Monday. Again, a huge thank you to my patrons. You are all amazing, and I'll see you just around the corner. And stay awesome.
Told, oh, those lead tell centuries old. sales.
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 Around the fire, eyes wide with fear. Of the unseen draw near, blurring lines between what's clear, between the real and what appears. In the night's embrace we find tales that haunt the mind, forever in the dark entwined, ghostly tales forever bind, forever.
My patron supporters, and a huge shout out